My name is Marissa, and I am so incredibly excited to be the host of a brand new podcast called FSC Therapy Podcast. FSC Therapy Podcast will be a platform in which we discuss everything ranging from fashion to mental health to current events. Join us as we bring you new guests each and every episode to discuss a variety of different topics. Follow us at FSC Therapy and at Fashion Fights Cancer on Instagram to stay up to date on all the incredible things we have planned ahead. Hi, everyone, and welcome to FSC Therapy Podcast. My name is Marissa, and I will be your host for this episode. Today, I am joined by some incredible designers, all part of our panel. These designers are known around the world, and they're all leaders in the fashion industry. So quickly, I'm just going to run through and introduce all of them. First, we have Jason Wu. Jason Wu is a world-renowned designer who has won awards everywhere, and he designs for his own namesake brand, Jason Wu. So hello, Jason. Welcome.
Hi, Marissa.
Welcome. We're so excited to have you. Next, we have Monique Payan, and Monique is a well-known sustainable designer, and she's really known for her incredible artistry and her handcrafted creations in both jewelry and sculpture, so that's super, super cool. Hello, Monique.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Excited
to have you here. And then we have Byron Lars. Byron is an acclaimed designer whose designs can be found in stores across the country. And you can find them all under his brand name, Byron Lars Beauty Mark. Hello, Byron. Welcome. Welcome.
Hi, Marissa. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And then next we have Francesca Liberatore. She's an Italian designer who has had her work shown in stages across the world. And she also designs under her own namesake brand, Francesca Liberatore. So hello, Francesca.
Hi, hello Marisa, hello everyone, and I'm very happy to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And you're tuning in from Italy, correct?
Yes, I'm here connected at 5 p.m.
Oh yeah, so we're on a very different time zone, so thank you for being here with us. I know it's a little bit different time zones over there. And then finally, we have Ty Canty, and Ty is the founder and CEO of Fashion Fights Cancer, so kind of the reason why we're all here today. This is FSC Therapy Podcast. Ty was the founding force behind all of this. And what FSC does is FSC provides a therapeutic outlook for cancer patients and cancer survivors as a way to help them go through their journey and, you know, kind of develop that way. So hello, Ty. Welcome.
Hello, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Hello, guys. Thank you all for being here. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
So yeah, as you can see, we have an incredible, incredible panel of the top leaders in the fashion industry today. And what we kind of want to discuss today is, you know, COVID-19, the pandemic, how it's affected us, how it continues to affect the fashion industry. Obviously, I'm sure we have all seen how so many things have been uprooted and changed, and we're all kind of adjusting each and every day and how we live. Francesca being in Italy, you know, there was a long, long time period where Italy is completely shut down. The United States, we're still pretty shut down, I would say, especially in the New York area, New Jersey, New York area. But yeah, we kind of just want to go through and discuss how this pandemic has changed the fashion industry and how it will continue to affect the fashion industry in the future. So kind of to begin, I guess we kind of want to touch on how each of you have been affected by the pandemic and how your company has coped with changes in the fashion industry since the pandemic began. So if we want to start with Francesca, let's hear the Italy perspective, and then we can hear the US perspective from everyone else as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I can also say that actually I was the last show in February Fashion Week, and
wow.
I did it inside a cinema. And I should say that that night of 22nd of February, they closed up every cinema in Milan because they didn't finish the Fashion Week and they closed the cinema in Milan. And my show was the last one added in the fashion. I was super lucky. And I should say, actually, that now we are planning something that is totally different from September, but we are definitely making, because I think that fashion is a part of society. So get input and give back product. So I think that now fashion needs to take a place inside this situation and represent to everyone, because fashion has this communication side, I think need to represent for everyone the changes of society and the changes of priority for people. So that's why I'm planning a very different format, a very different event, but which I think is not just because of COVID, it's because fashion is representing a very fluid and changing society. And then this is what will impact everyone, that impacted already everyone. And I think we have the power to find new keys of problem solving and new keys to make people approaching to fashion. So this is my aim for the next fashion week. And I'm happy that I started this kind of format changes already since two seasons. So it's already two seasons that I have different shows, not the normal runway. So I think that is important that a garment is on top of a human body. So I think this is something that I want to keep because at the end it's people that are perceiving our fashion, it's people that enjoy our fashion, and it's people that reflect together with our fashion. So I think this is the main aim, and this is what needs to be saved from fashion and can be, and a lot of other aspects need to be adjusted because the society changes.
Absolutely, and I totally agree. Fashion is always innovative. It always will be innovative. That is such a goal of fashion, you know? So continue to innovate while adjusting to all the changes within society itself. So I love that you were able to show your, you know, have your show still, even though everything shut down, you know? Yeah, very lucky with that, I would say.
Yeah, I was super lucky. And as well, I was lucky that no one is in our 1,000 people inside the cinema venue got anything, actually, and also 40 of us working in actually Chinatown in Milan. No one of us got anything, and we were really lucky. And I think this was, I should keep it as a sign, because at one point we were really scared that the situation can collapse and that we have no people for the show, because actually on the 2 weeks before the show, as all my colleagues here, we probably are totally blocked with no info, nothing, because we don't want to hear anything that is happening in the world, just concentrate in our collection. So none of us was really understanding what's happening. So we just get to the show and everything was regular that day. So we were lucky, and we fingers crossed that like the solution I found for September can go on and can give this new perspective.
Yeah, totally, fingers crossed for that. And I'm glad, you know, Italy was able to come through that as well. And so kind of turning towards the US perspective from Jason, Byron, or Monique, how did you guys kind of cope with the pandemic? And, you know, ours kind of hit a little bit later than Italy, I think, our kind of peak of it. So how did you guys adjust? How did you guys cope? We can start with anybody, Byron, if you want to jump in. I kind of think you look like you want to.
Well, oh, you know what? I'm just like reacting to Francesca, who as far as I'm concerned, you have just been my cheerleader, because you seem so clear and resolute on what forward movement looks like, while I've just kind of had this surreal buffering wheel over my head. Wow. Because I'm just wondering, what will she want? What will I want? How everything has changed and is changing daily. I'm just trying to get my footing daily to see just how we respond to that. I will say, though, that when we were first shut down, a glimmer of hope was one of our Chinese e-tailers. We had had some things in work for her before Chinese New Year. And then, of course, everything shut down there, so it stopped. But when they opened, she started releasing. She went live with a couple of skirts and a top. And, you know, it was only a couple hundred pieces of each unit, but they sold out in a week. So she took the rest in, and then it performed really well. So I'm like, well, if that's how our Chinese customer responded after kind of reopening, then it left me hopeful for what maybe reopening could look like here. But then again, who knows? But then at that time, since everything had stopped here, I mean, her business, because then, you know, she ordered more things from us that kept my factory there working, because, you know, they were shut down. Then once they opened, then we were shut down. That's just like a really bad situation. Cool. And of course, your factory survival is absolutely key in your survival. So at least that was like manna from heaven, literally, that happened there, that we could just kind of keep them afloat while this all unfolds. But in terms of us being leaders and creating things that she'll respond to after this, I have to be honest, I know that like things will probably take a decidedly more casual bend in many aspect. We can't discount, as my colleague has always reminded me, what about virtual events where people will be dressing up to share that? Because we had a few weddings, people getting married in our stuff during the shutdown, and I can tell you they were like our life raft.
Wow.
You know what I mean? When I saw people expressing love in the most beautiful way, it through the midst of that hell, it was really very, I won't even say gratifying, it was essential, because some days when you're just hanging on by a thread and then you see something great happening, that can be shared virtually. It's just like, yes, thank you. There is still love in the world. There is still hope in the world. And all
it's nice to
is
see.
Okay.
Can I ask a question, Byron? When you said, you say your Chinese customer, your product sold out. Do you think it was a result because of slow fashion? They weren't able to get it as fast. And then it was like, we couldn't really shop. And then, wow, they have it. And then they just want to buy it up. You think it was because of slow fashion? It took longer to get it to them?
I don't 100% understand the dynamics of what happened there, because this all comes through an e-tailer there who really has a very special relationship with her customer. Like, they really trust her. Okay. She's really created something kind of like special there. She introduced us to her customer. So there was a big level of trust before she even knew us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that was certainly a key part of the equation in that. But even with her relationship with her cousin, I was a little surprised that she was as responsive post-shutdown as she was, you know, because, I mean, nobody knows what to expect. And, I mean, I hope it's kind of like that for us. I certainly don't expect it to be, but, you know, at least I've seen evidence that it could be.
It's definitely very interesting to see, like, how consumers will adjust and how consumers will behave and how that'll all change. I looked a lot into that because I think it's fascinating how people come out of this, you know, and it's even more so not even come out of it, because we don't know how long we're going to be in it. All consumers are kind of in a space of, like, what next? And I feel like because of that, a lot of designers are also in a space of what next. So looking at that, I know we've heard, you know, Francesca's explanation and Byron's explanation of that. I would love to hear, like, Monique, on the standpoint of jewelry and looking at jewelry design. You know, I feel like that's a little bit different than clothing itself. So how have you guys kind of coped with it all?
I guess like everyone, it's been a very challenging and sobering past few months. And I think at the end of the day, we're all just need to be thankful for what we have and our health and our safety. And for those who have lost loved ones, my heart goes out to them. Unfortunately, I know this has affected so many people and will continue to affect so many people. I closed my studio on March 10th, and on that day, just felt, with reading everything that was going on, that I needed to put safety first and health first. So I've been having my team work from home since. I'm fortunate in that my studio is only a 10-minute walk away from my apartment. So I've been personally going back and forth and keeping everything afloat while my team works from home. And, you know, that's had its challenges, but at the same time, it's presented opportunities for me to find the time to explore different mediums. And I've been spending a lot more time charcoaling and sketching and sculpting and slowing down again and taking a little bit of a break from the madness. I also found that with what I'm doing in terms of focusing on extremely rare materials like off-life dyed bone and meteorites in my work, that the fashion schedule didn't make sense for me. And I can't even imagine as a clothing designer how one can keep up, because I could barely keep up. And I think that I've been very fortunate in that my collectors have continued to come to me over the past few months. And I've been really fortunate with regards to that. Years ago, I had my work in over 50 different stores internationally. And today, I'm not in one store. So that's a massive change. And showing my work in galleries and art and design fairs and mostly working directly with collectors. So I've been very fortunate that I've made that shift, because it's allowed me to survive. And I think that if I was relying on stores right now, it would be very, very challenging.
Totally. And that makes sense. And I think it's so cool how, you know, your industry and working with collectors and things like that, looking at jewelry, it can adjust to a different fashion cycle a little bit easier. So I guess the next question for Jason, I guess, too, would be, because everything kind of was disrupted, are we going to see a spring, summer fashion season, you know, like it was kind of cut out because of the pandemic and everyone being home? Do you kind of see those trends repeating itself, the trends that we had predicted for the spring season? Or do you see fashion just continuing to move on? Do you see us kind of just pushing the fact that, you know, those designs weren't released, those designs weren't able to be seen all the time? Do you see us pushing that aside, or do you see us bringing those trends back around again?
Well, I mean, I've always really believed in, you know, timeless fashion. I believe that, you know, as designers, we have to create something that people can cover for a long time. You know, that's always been my theory, and it's always been our way of working. And I think that rings more true than ever today, because during the pandemic, I kind of went into like a 2 weeks of a dark hole. Like, I just didn't really know what to do with myself. And then I kind of came out and I started being creative again. I was like, oh, I have time. I'm used to going out every night, you know, seeing friends and all of that. And I was like, oh, I have like hours a night. So like, I kind of, I started really cooking every single day. I started like a food journey Instagram called Mr. Wu Eats. You know, I always love cooking, but I don't do that on weekends. And I think over the last 3 months, I made over a hundred new things I've never made before. Because, you know, I love traveling. You know, since I couldn't travel for the first time in a very long time, I made everything from paella to like sushi. So, you know, it was really wow. Great. And it was actually a really great way to stay creative because, you know, food also, you eat with your eyes first, you know, so the presentation and all of that. Just like I had all this time, you know, it wasn't like everything was in a rush. And then I really found my rhythm doing that. It also kind of gave me a different perspective on what's really important. I started like, you know, I saved little things like saving all the scallion roots and growing them in the window, you know, just mm-hmm. with some water. And I kind of really understood where my parents came from. My parents were poor when they had us and lived with my grandparents. And, you know, they were always very, very, even when things were much better, we grew up not feeling that. But my parents were always very conservative, very conscious of what they used. For example, a lot of paper towels and things of that nature, right? And for the first time in my 37 years, it was like I really understood what that meant because, you know, all of a sudden, toilet paper was scarce. Hand sanitizer was nowhere to be found. Like easy things that you take for granted are now all of a sudden rare. And then you realize that the resources of the world and resources that we become very comfortable with are now scarce. So that it could go away any day. So, you know, it gives you a new way of thinking. And that kind of came back to the way I think about fashion is that we actually just moved everything out because obviously the stores were closed for 3 months. And for the first time in my 12-year career, fall is actually shipping in fall. I know that sounds really funny, but fall usually ships in the summer.
Yeah.
And we always have, and we all of a sudden fashion became fast fashion, even when you're a designer business, you know, and that was a very, very, I would say, it had a very negative impact on a lot of designers, including myself. We felt like we were always being rushed. We have no time to sell and that there's no time to be inspired because all you're presented with every season from the stores are about your sell-throughs and everything, you know, and everything, you know, everyone's so used to buying things on sale. And that's really, really driven by a lot of the mass retailers of the world right now. And I think, you know, this time has allowed me to kind of think about how I want to be a designer, how I want to take things back in control in my own hands. And you know what? What I designed in February, I still love, and I am releasing it in the fall when it should actually be released. And so actually, I think it's a system in fashion that's been a bit flawed for many, many years. You know, as fashion designers, you think fashion is always moving forward, but we were actually stuck in a very old system. And so what we needed to do was a very giant push. And that giant push doesn't necessarily mean it's comfortable, but this kind of gave us the push that as a whole and working as a community for the first time, because we didn't do that. Fashion designers aren't necessarily known to be working with each other the best all the time, you know? It can be a little catty. And I just think, you know, for the first time, you know, I'm talking to other designers all the time. We're talking about how, as independent designers, we can make a bigger shift.
Yeah, definitely.
In a positive way. Like, us competing with mass retailers just doesn't make sense. We can never compete with a garment that is $20 or a sneaker that is $60.
Yeah,
you know, we can't do that.
So
and also, like, you know, I think the big lesson here is, and I know we're coming from a fashion designer who sells clothes, but we all need to buy less. They might buy better. I think that's the one thing that I think we
should
emerge.
Brother.
Don't buy stuff that is trendy and cute for the season, you know, and buy something and think about that. Is it something you want to own? You know,
Do you think with talking about that, you know, do you think that consumers will kind of shift towards that? Because I feel like recently we've seen so many huge things. Yeah, and recently we've seen so many huge things where I feel like finally consumers are, you know, I feel like it's always been a conversation of how do you make fashion industry more sustainable? You know, how do you get consumers to want to shop more sustainable? Being that sustainable shopping is usually more expensive, you know? So I feel like recently with, you know, everything happening, we finally have seen consumers really start paying attention to who they're buying from and what they're buying more than ever before. So do you guys see that kind of that trend continuing? Do you see fast fashion slowing down more and sustainable fashion coming up?
I mean, I do hope so. I mean, I think, you know, and I don't mean like, you know, investing in your wardrobe has necessarily to do with price either. You know, everyone has different budgets, but it's about buying things that you can wear for a long time and that fits within your price point. It doesn't have to be a $2,000 dress. I do believe having investment pieces will be great, but it's not a price only situation. You know, I think you want things of substance and you want things that you can have for a very long time. And I hope that this will teach people that a little bit, at least shift the consumer mind. And also, you know, in terms of being conscious, you know, I think using upcycled fabric is great. And I think there's definitely a lot of recycled fabrics. But I think ultimately what really, really makes a difference is we all consume a little bit less.
Totally.
You know, as a whole, in every single way, we can live on much less than what we're used to.
Totally,
you know,
more sustainable, exactly.
And pretty wasteful culture.
Let me ask a question, Monique. So I know the fashion designers are moving more to sustainability, but what is already a sustainable brand? Are you seeing any changes or were you okay during this pandemic?
I mean, it's definitely been challenging, but I think that as Jason was just saying, we're going to have hopefully see more of a shift to quality over quantity and where consumers and collectors can be more focused on how an item or a piece was made, the artisans, the designer, the process that goes into it, actually taking the time to understand the inspiration and the quality that's there and that the piece that the purchaser or the collector ultimately adds to their collection that they'll have for generations. I mean, when you look back at some of the pieces that your parents have in their closet or in their collections, they're pieces that maybe they got 30 or 40 or 50 years ago that still look brand new. And there's a reason why you covet those pieces, or even if you go into your own closet, your own collection, there are pieces that you love that could be decades old and still look brand new because there was care and quality that was put into that, to that garment or into that piece. So that's always been something that I've been focused on, and it does make the work more expensive. I've looked at making pieces abroad. I still make pieces in New York City. And then I work with artisans all over the world to employ them at fair trade. And if I were to make many of my pieces in China, they could be 50% cheaper. But there's a price to everything. We might just not just see it in the price tag. There's a human and an environmental toll that I think that we really need to take, that we need to be much more aware of. Mm-hmm. As Jason said, I think less is more. And really going back to quality over quantity.
Wow.
Absolutely. And so with that, you know, like we talked, I feel like so much of this is from the perspective of the United States and, you know, seeing the U.S. consumer. I feel like the U.S. was so big in fast fashion. You know, there was a while where the U.S. consumer was just fast fashion. So for Italy, looking at Francesca, like, do you feel like Italian consumers are really similar? I feel like a lot of times Italian consumers, they have more understanding of a higher end of fashion than U.S. consumers a lot of times. Do you see that? Or like, what does it look like in Italy for sustainability and going forward in sustainable fashion?
Yeah, I think I have I would like to link my opinion to what Jason and Monique just said, because I think I have the different approach, either the Italian and either from an Italian brand that come to show in New York Fashion Week for 7 seasons. So I have this different perception, and I don't think it's just like the product, the perception about the product, but I think it's really true what Jason said about the timeless pieces, and at the same time what Monique say about the how strong still are some pieces that are in our parents' wardrobe or in our grandmother wardrobe. And I think that behind that there is a very strong meaning, very strong storytelling. And I think this is something that, as Jason say, and as I truly believe, big fashion brand that are not like individual brand, they really lost, and they bring all this market to lose that feeling because of the product, because of the quantity, because of reaching several markets and reaching the best and the more expectation from their public. As a smaller brand or an individual brand, I can definitely choose the way I want to go as a designer. And I think the storytelling behind a garment is what can make it timeless. because I never refer to attendance, or I never refer. Of course, I try to understand the input from the people that they're going to receive my garment to the society. So very different is if I'm showing it in Italy, where I know that people are more keen on certain aspect or are more keen on a certain aesthetic according as well to the shape of their human body. Or in the other side, if I'm coming to New York according to the historical reason, according how the New York Fashion Week has started, then the people has a total different approach and they perceive fashion with a different aim and a different kind of fun according to that different involvement inside the society. So